Okay. Good morning. So let's see. On Friday, there's the midterm. I guess last time I said something about the plans for the midterm. So we go. Right. Okay. So I guess I already said most of the what you need to know. So there are some old exams. There are solutions to those up now. We'll hold it here. And once you're in notes, you'll use your cameras. And that's pretty much it. And we're covering 8, 9, 10, and 13. So if there are no questions about that, then my plan for today is to just do some more with power series. And what I'd like to do with power series is justify what we mentioned last time about how they interact with derivatives, because that's one of the more useful aspects. And then just do some examples of things you can do with them, because they turn out to be, in one way, very special functions, but in another way, functions that come up remarkably frequently, given how special they are. And there are sort of interesting things you can do with them if you have a lot of power to deal with them. Okay, so let me just start then with the relationship between a derivative and a power series, which we saw last time, but we didn't write it out. So this is a theorem 10.22. And it says that if you have a function which is a limit of power series, S of x is in our usual setup, sum a n x minus c to the n, and runs from 0 to infinity. And the meaning, of course, of that is that we're taking the pointwise limit. So this is a limit of power series. Okay. And the situation we usually want is where we have a positive radius of convergence. So sometimes it's not, but let's assume it is. So with radius of convergence R sub s being strictly bigger than zero. So remember, zero is a possibility, and we saw a couple examples last time. Then we can also get our hands on the derivative. Let me write it this way. So the derivative as a function, s prime of x, is also the limit of a power series. And it's the one you would expect, you would hope to be true. And so that's the sum where we take this derivative. So n equals the infinity, and then we have a n times n times x minus c to the n minus 1. So we take the derivative of the approximant, and the limit of the derivatives is the derivative of the limit. And actually, if we re-index this so that it fits into our format with the power of x minus c being called n, then we've shifted it by 1. So we have n plus 1 times n plus 1. So there's our derivative. Okay, and is again a limit of a power series. And then the other final useful fact, besides that it's some power series, it's got the same radius of convergence. So with R sub s prime equal R sub s. Okay. So actually, can anyone see if we're have written this function as a limit of functions? And we'd like to say that the derivative of our function is the limit of the derivatives. Which of our previous theorems is going to be helpful there? I guess the number's not that compelling, 9.18. But remember what that says. It says that we have fn prime converging to G uniformly, and fn converging to F at some point, then that's enough to get that F prime is equal to G. And that so that we want to get into that framework. All right. So let's do that. All right. So the first thing we need is some uniform convergence. Okay. And so that's the first thing to try to remember now about power series. If we have that the S here is the limit of a power series, in what interval do we have that this is convergence in uniform norm? So recall S of X is the uniform limit. Maybe I'll write it this way. So the collection sum n equals zero to capital N of a little n, X minus e to the n, converges uniformly to S of X. Okay, and let's see, can anyone say what where that convergence is uniform? So remember, so this is one of the key properties of a power series.
Well, it would have to be for it would have to be like the closed interval where with C minus R, comma C plus R, but where R, little r is like less than.
That's right. That's exactly right. So there's also a comment in the comment box, which is close, but you're more correct. You have to move a little bit in, any amount in from the radius. Okay. So you have to be a little r, which is a little bit smaller than big R. It doesn't converge uniformly in the whole of big R, but as long as you make it a little bit smaller than it does, just as you said. So the center minus little r to the center plus little r, little r, any number that's smaller than this radius of convergence r sub s. Okay, and that's the key. Not uniform in all of the interval from C minus big R to C plus big R, where it is pointwise convergent. Okay, so that's one of the important things to remember about powers is the pointwise convergent out to big R, and then you have to truncate any small amount, and then they become uniform, the convergence inside there. Okay, so we have that. So that's a good start. We have something that's converging uniformly somewhere. Actually, though, the one that we have converging is this one, right? We have that one converging uniformly, and we want this one too. But let's then look at this series and show that one also converges. So check. This is similar to something you did last time, and I'm not going to do it. Okay, and what I want to check is that if we had this sequence appear converging, and I take this x minus c to be slightly smaller so that we can use that ratio advantage, then that's going to kill off any of these ends. And so this sequence also is going to converge. So let me just write that out. Similar to what we did last time, if we have S of X, converges, and we have Y closer to C than X is, then this sum also converges. A N plus one, X, Y minus C to the N is also gonna converge. Okay, so that's a side check. It's similar to what we did last time. Okay, hence, let me just note the theorem number up here. This was theorem 10.3, just in case you want to look it up. And so we'll make use of that again. To say that since our function, our power series converges, this time the derivative power series here converges, it also converges uniformly in the same regime. You go in a little bit and it converges uniformly. Again, we have this sum, a n plus one times n plus one, x minus c to the n converges uniformly in the same interval that we had up above, where we go in a little bit. So c minus little r to c plus little r. Okay, now we're doing better, right? So we have this sequence, that's gonna be our fn primes converging uniformly to some g. And we also have the, to some g, and we also have the original one converging actually uniformly, but in particular at a point. And so then we are in the hypotheses that we need. So, so let's just give it a name. Let me call that T of X. Okay, so by 9.18, we have that the limit S prime is equal to the limit T. Okay, so if we look up above, this is playing the role of my little g up above here in the application of this theorem. And the S is playing the role of my F, right? And then these are the Fn primes. Okay, any questions about that? Okay, so we have this. All right, and so let's see some corollaries of this. It turns out that this tells us quite a bit about our functions. And so in particular, let's see. Yeah, let me note the following. If we have something that is a limit of a power series, then it's actually its own Taylor series. Okay, so corollary, if we're in that same hypothesis as above. So S of X is a limit of a power series, AN X minus C to the N as usual, has R sub S bigger than zero, just like in our hypotheses. Then if I take the associated Taylor series, I get the same sequence. Well, so the Taylor series for S about C. Okay, and so let me just check why that follows. So remember what the Taylor series is. So the Taylor series all right, so that's the sum of, well, we take the nth derivative. We evaluate it at C. We divide by n factorial. And we multiply by x minus c to the n. Okay. And so the claim is that that series, that Taylor series, is the same as the series we started with. So we need that an to be this sn at c divided by n factorial. So we need to show that a sub n is equal to s, the nth derivative evaluated at c, divided by n factorial. Okay, so I hope that's clear. All right, and so how we do that, this 10.22, how do I compute the nth derivative of S? Well, I just start taking derivatives, and this tells me over here how to take derivatives, right? I just do it term-wise. Oops, in the reasonable way, I just take the derivatives of the terms. And so this says I just have to do that n times, and then I'll have what I want. So let me call it the kth derivative because I still have a sum. So let me take the kth derivative of my function evaluated at x. Okay, and all I have to do is take a k derivative. So it's going to be the sum an. And then if I differentiate k times, I'm going to have first n and then n minus 1, et cetera. So I have k terms. So that's going to be n minus k plus 1. And then I'm going to have x minus c. And I've dropped it down k times. It's going to be to the n minus k. So I hope that's clear. OK, so now this says that I want to see what that value is at C. So let me plug a C in. Okay, so I've got an X minus C here, and I'm plugging in a C for X. So what is this right-hand side going to be? It's a little bit of a trick. There's one term that's going to give me something. Which one is that? Yeah, and so what is k going to be when n going to be? Let me write down what I'm summing over here. So this is n runs from 0 to infinity. So which value of n is going to give me a 0 there? So if I actually plug in n equals 0, right, then this is going to give me a 0 there. So which value of n am I going to have to plug in to get a 0 exponent here? Right, okay, so does everyone see that? So when I plug in n equals k, then I'm going to have this to the 0th power. When I plug in n is bigger than that, then these are all going to go away. Okay, so I'm going to end up with the term from n equals k, I'm going to have a sub k, and then I'm going to have k factorial. Okay, and this is from, and then the next term is going to be 0, et cetera, and I'm going to get a whole bunch of zeros. And this came from the term n equals k, and this is from n equals k plus 1. Etc. Okay, and I wrote something wrong. So what did I write wrong before? I was supposed to cross multiply, right? So this this a n is supposed to be equal to s to n divided by n factorial. And when I I guess it's right. Okay, sorry. Okay, so I'm done. Okay, so we've got that our whenever we have a power series, it's Taylor series. Okay, so we already have a bunch of things where we studied the Taylor series, and this gives us some examples of these power series. All right, and one more. Let me give actually two more corollaries. So one corollary of this is that if I have two power series that are equal, so S of x is the limit of a power series, the sum a n x minus c to the n, and with r sub s bigger than zero. So that's the case we always care about. T is the sum of, say, bn x minus c to the n with rt bigger than zero. And we have that they agree. So S of x is equal to T of x in some neighborhood. Of C, then we have that an is just equal to bn, so they're exactly the same. Right? So it means that just writing out the power series is a good proxy for your function, because that uniquely there's only one way you can do that. Okay, and so the proof is now following from above. If we look at this an, right, this says that we can just write it as a derivative of s. So this is the nth derivative of s evaluated at c times 1 over n factorial. Okay, but since my two functions agree in a neighborhood of c, their derivatives all agree. So this is the same as the nth derivative at c of t. And that's the same as bn. So we're done. But while that's fairly straightforward to compute, I mean, it just took one line, it actually implies something a bit surprising about these functions. Let me just write it this way. Corollary, most functions are not limits of power series. And the intuition here is that we've just stated that if we have a function that's a limit of a power series, and we know what it is just in any little tiny neighborhood of C, then we know what it is everywhere. So if I have a function that's the same here and I change it over here somewhere, that's no longer a limit of a power series. So it's a very restricted class of functions. Nonetheless, it turns out to be helpful. And let me give some examples of how you can use those. Okay, so the next thing I want to try, and I'll let you try this a little bit of it in the breakout room in a second, but I want to use this to get an approximation to pi over 2 root 3. So approximate pi over 2 root 3 by a sequence of rational numbers. All right, and so let me do that. And so this harkens back and uses some of the things that we have seen previously, so it's convenient for that also. So the idea is that one function that's related to pi is the arctangent, and the arctangent is a function whose derivative we know something about from Math 21 and also from, I guess it was Theorem 8.23 earlier. So recall, uh, 8.23, If I take the arctangent of x and take its derivative, so remember we had a formula for derivatives of inverse functions. So this is going to be 1 over the derivative of the tangent evaluated at the inverse function. So the derivative of the tangent evaluated at the arctangent. And root of tangent secant squared. This is 1 over secant squared evaluated at the arctangent. And you can see from a picture. So remember what the arctangent means. If I take this angle here and I make that one x and that one 1, one, so then we get the square root of 1 minus. 1 plus x squared for the hypotenuse, then this is the arctangent of x over 1, the arctangent of x. Okay, and on the other hand, the secant of that is just 1 plus x squared all square root, and we squared it, so we get 1 over 1 plus x squared. So this picture gives you that equality. Okay, so that's a handy fact. But why is this useful? So, which is equal to, so we're in a section on power series. All right, so how can I express this function as a limit of a power series? So can anyone see that? So remember, one over one minus x is just the power series x to the n. All right, so can anyone see how to turn this into a power series making use of that? So what should I plug in here for my x?
Negative x squared.
Mm-hmm. All right. Does everyone see that? So I plug in negative x squared. So that's this is a 1 minus 1 over 1 minus negative x squared. So that's negative x squared. So this is then going to be the sum n equals 0 to infinity of minus x squared to the n. Okay. All right, this is not quite what we wanted, right? This is the power series for the derivative. But now we have this theorem that says that if we knew the power series for the arctangent, we could find the power series for the derivative. And we also know that inverse of the derivative is unique from something we worked out earlier. So we can write down what power series is going to converge to the arctangent itself. So let's do that. So the arctangent. Oh, and actually, before I do that, what's the radius of convergence here? Can anyone see that? Well, what was it down here? Yep, it was 1 there. And the same thing's gonna work here, right? Because we're plugging in minus x squared and 1 squared is 1. So this has also got a radius of convergence of 1, right? As long as x is less than 1, so it's x squared, and so we get convergence. All right, so arctangent of x, at least inside of this regime, with a radius of less than one. Of course, arctangent is defined for all x, right? But we're only going to be able to understand it between minus one and one using this. But it's a good start. All right, so let's do that. So arctangent of x is equal to sum. Okay, and n equals to infinity. All right, so what am I going to do to get the power series for the antiderivative of something whose power series I know? Okay, well, so I'm just going to take the antiderivative term by term. Okay, so I'm going to take the antiderivatives of the terms. And so then this is, which we saw last time. So this is, let's see, so if I take the antiderivative here, I get minus one to the n. That doesn't change, it's a product. And then I have a power, so I get x to the, it goes up by one, 2n plus one. And then I divide by 2n plus 1, okay? If absolute value of x is less than 1, which is the radius of convergence. Okay, and now as advertised, I'm trying to get a rational approximation to pi over 2 root 3. All right, and so what I'd like is to have this arctangent of x be equal to something involving pi. And I have to make sure that I'm plugging in something which is less than 1. So let me just try that. So I'm going to use the following triangle. Which is one here and one half here and root 3/2 here, right? So half of an equilateral triangle. And so then this angle is pi over 6, because it's half an equilateral triangle. And it's also the arctangent of something. Okay, and is it clear what that's the arctangent of? So remember that the tangent of an angle is the opposite over the adjacent here. So if I take the arctangent of opposite over adjacent, then I get the angle, right? So this would be the arctangent of 1/2 divided by root 3/2. Okay, so this is the arctangent of 1/ root 3. Okay, so actually, maybe I'll give you a couple minutes to just try this on your own in the breakout room. But what I would like to end up with is a formula of the form pi over 2 root 3 is equal to, and then I just want some sum of rational numbers, infinite sum of rational numbers. And actually, it converges pretty fast, so you can get a good estimate pretty quickly of what pi over 2 root 3 is. Why don't you just try that? I'll give you a couple minutes here. Okay, let's see. So did anyone manage to figure out what this turns into here? No. All right. Well, let's try it. So I have pi over 6 is equal to the arctangent of 1 over root 3. And this is less than 1. So then this is equal to the limit as of this sum. N equals 0 to infinity of minus 1 to the n. And we're plugging in 1 third, so 1 over root 3. So 1 over root 3 to the 2n plus 1 divided by 2n plus 1. And then I can simplify that. So I have this n equals 0 to infinity minus 1 to the n. And in the denominator, let me just leave the 2n plus 1 alone. And now the root 3s, there are 2n of them. So that's going to be 3 to the n, and then one more. So I have this root 3. Okay. All right, then. So now if I multiply both sides by root 3, then I have root 3 pi over 6. And 6, I guess, is 2 times 3. So then the 3 and the root 3 can be partially canceled, and I get pi over 2 root 3, which is what I wanted. And that's supposed to be equal to this sum, n equals 0 to infinity of minus 1 to the n divided by 2n plus 1 times 3 to the n. So in other words, if I start summing over here at n equals 0, this is just 1 over 1 times 1. So the first term is just a 1. And then at n equals 1, I'm going to get a negative. And it's going to be 1 over 3 times 3. And I'm going to plus 1 over 5 times 9, and then a minus 1 over 7 times 27, and then a plus 1 over 9 times 81, et cetera. Okay. And this is already enough to give me about 3 decimal places. Okay, any questions about that? So that's an example. All right, well then let me do one more example of use for these power series, and that is in differential equations. And so let me just go to the simplest differential equation that actually came up in the 21 series. And there we noted that we had a solution and we used it a lot. But what we want to prove now using these power series is that that, in fact, is the only solution. So let's see, this is proposition 10.25. And so the differential equation that I'm talking about, of course, is exponential growth. And so if we have f of 0 equals 1 and f prime of x equals f of x, then f of x is actually equal to a constant times e to the x, right? That's what we want to prove. All right, and so again, I said that these are very rare functions, but the claim is these are are at least solutions to useful differential equations. All right, so the first thing is that e to the x is equal to this sum x to the n over n factorial. It's a limit of a power series, so it's in the framework that we're in now. And if I compute the derivative, so we get to practice taking derivatives of power series, then this is the sum n equals 0 to infinity. And I take the derivative, so I get n times x to the n minus 1 divided by n factorial. And if I cancel those n's, that's the sum n equals 0 to infinity of x to the, 1 to infinity, x to the n minus 1 over n minus 1 factorial. And then if I shift my indexing, then I'm back where I started. So the sum n equals 0 to infinity, x to the n over n factorial. Okay, so this is e to the x. So it is a solution. All right. The other thing to notice is that e to the x is not 0, because I'm going to try now to divide by it. Okay, and so now we can go back and remember some of our rules and compute that a derivative is equal to 0. And the derivative I'm going to take is the ratio f of x divided by e to the x. All right, and so let me just compute. So this is using my quotient rule, derivative of the top times the bottom, minus the top times the derivative of the bottom, divided by the square. But f is equal to f prime, e to the x is equal to e to the x prime, so this is just a 0. All right, and now we can go back to our theorem. So what can I say about functions whose derivative is 0? People remember that? Okay, so the only functions whose derivative are 0 are constant functions. So this says that f of x divided by e to the x is a constant. So we have what we wanted. So f of x is equal to some constant times e to the x. All right, so let me then do just one more thing with these power series. So I've mentioned several times that power series are very special functions, but I haven't produced an example of a function that is not a power series. All the examples we've had are power series, but since they're very special, there should be some that aren't. And this is a an example that's not. This is, I guess, a proposition 10.29, a smooth function that's not a power series. So phi of x and we're gonna define it piecewise, just like we did say the function that's 0 and 1 or the function that was an angle. And so it's going to be 0 if x is less than or equal to 0, but it's going to be an e to the minus 1 on x if x is bigger than 0. Okay, so first of all, I claim that this is infinitely smooth, infinitely differentiable. So phi of x is in, I guess we call it C infinity of R. Got all its derivatives. So let's see, since it's got all its derivatives, if it has a derivative at 0, what is it? next our function is zero up until zero, and then it's something, looks kind of like this, when x is bigger than zero. But if I'm focusing here at zero, can anyone tell me what the derivative would have to be, the nth derivative, if it exists at zero?
Would it be zero?
Mm-hmm. Right. And actually, and how do I know that it has to be zero? If it exists. Okay. Because if I compute it from the left and I compute it from the right, right, I need to get the same answer, right? And if I look to the left, the function is just zero, all right? So the derivatives, or all the derivatives, will be zero if I look to the left. All right, so this has got to be equal to zero. Okay, but then what is the associated Taylor series? For phi of x about zero, is that clear? Okay, so it's always of the form the sum. You take the nth derivative, you divide by n factorial, and then multiply by x to the n. X minus c, c is zero. So but all of the derivatives, we're evaluating at zero, all of the derivatives at zero are zero. And so this is just the zero function. So this is not different from phi of x. All right, so this is quite different from the behavior that we have seen in the example we've done before here. This is not a limit of a power series. And we saw that if it were a limit of some other power series, maybe we just got the wrong one, then in fact, it would be its Taylor series, and it's not that, okay? So it's not a limit of any power series. So phi of x is not a limit of a power series at about zero. Okay, so out of time, and I will stick around in case there are questions.